This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight:
the State of Israel, working with other refugee managing organizations, has requested Uganda to allow about 500 refugees of Eritrean and Sudanese descent to be relocated to Uganda.
That's Musa Ekweru, Uganda's State Minister for Relief, Disaster Preparedness and Refugees. Details coming up. Also, while Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari says he will seek re-election in 2019, Nigerian political observers say the public has mixed views of his record. And according to the World Bank, Kenya's economy is actually growing this year. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story: in a turnaround, Uganda's government announced today it may take in 500 African asylum seekers from Israel. Israel wants to relocate thousands of Africans, mostly Eritrean and Sudanese, that it says entered Israel illegally. Halima Tumani has the story from Kampala.
Uganda's State Minister for Relief, Disaster Preparedness and Refugees, Musa Ekweru, acknowledged the request from Israel during a news conference Friday.
The State of Israel, working with other refugee managing organizations, has requested Uganda to allow about 500 refugees of Eritrean and Sudanese descent to be relocated to Uganda. The government and my ministry are positively considering this request.
The UN Refugee Agency says some 4,000 African asylum seekers have voluntarily left Israel for Uganda and Rwanda since 2013, reports both countries have continuously denied. Speaking to reporters Friday, Ekweru denied the existence of any so-called secret deals between Uganda and Israel on the matter. He said applicants for the 500 slots currently being discussed would be rigorously vetted.
We are processing. The eligibility committee is standing by just to receive the first batch, and we'll process them through the assessment. And those who will meet our criteria will certainly be granted asylum immediately.
He did not offer further details, though he did seem to indicate the relocations to Uganda would be voluntary. Israel is home to about 40,000 African asylum seekers. Most are from Eritrea and Sudan and say they cannot return home for fear of conflict or oppression. Many arrived in Israel between 2006 and 2012. Israel's government rejects claims the Africans are refugees, describing them as economic migrants and infiltrators. In January, Israel issued an ultimatum to the single men in the group: accept a cash payment and a plane ticket to a third country in Africa, or face detention and deportation. The Israeli government's plan to begin forced deportations in April has been put on a hold by Israel's Supreme Court. For Uganda, welcoming asylum seekers from Israel could prove to be a touchy subject. The country is already straining to host more than 1.4 million refugees, most of whom have fled conflicts in neighboring South Sudan and the Democratic Republic of Congo in just the past 2 years. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
4 years ago, Nigerian activists issued a simple demand: bring back our girls. They demanded the Nigerian government rescue 276 schoolgirls taken in the night by Boko Haram from their dormitories in the northeastern town of Chibok. As we mark yet another anniversary of the mass kidnapping, activists say Nigeria's government must do better. Chika Odua reports from Dakar.
Since their abduction in 2014, some Chibok girls have escaped Boko Haram. Others have been freed through negotiations. But 112 kidnapped girls are still missing. Esther Yakubu's daughter, Dorcas, is among them.
Even our baby is not bad, but you know, we have a lot of girls that are bad now. We appreciate it.
Esther has been an outspoken activist, but on this 4-year anniversary of her daughter's kidnapping, she has nothing more to say to the Nigerian government.
What message? Only prayer.
The Chibok girls were still Boko Haram's largest single kidnapping, but they represent a pattern of violence in the now 9-year conflict. On Friday, the UN Children's Fund released new findings reporting that Boko Haram has abducted more than 1,000 school-aged children since 2013. UNICEF said more than 2,000 teachers have been killed and 1,400 schools destroyed. UNICEF said there are few safe spaces left for children in the Northeast. Here's Bring Back Our Girls activist Yvonne Benson-Idahosa.
Absolutely nothing has changed since the abduction of the Chibok girls. And so the fact that, you know, innocent children still remain vulnerable to being kidnapped and abducted and trafficked at will, I think is certainly indicative of the fact that Nigeria is not in a place where the Bring Back Our Girls movement can step back or be less demanding for the safety and security of all our children.
The brazen abduction in February of more than 100 female students from another government high school in another northeastern town, Dapchi, contradicted the Nigerian government's repeated claim that Boko Haram has been defeated. Amnesty International noted similarities in the abductions of the Dapchi girls in 2018 and the Chibok girls in 2014. And Amnesty said Nigerian security forces ignored warnings of the Dapchi attack. VOA spoke with Samira Daoud from Amnesty International's West and Central Africa Regional Office.
This will never end. The Nigerian government seems not to have learned any lesson from what happened and haven't taken any kind of measure to ensure that this will never happen again. And if it can happen exactly the same way 4 years after, that means that the government is not listening.
But the Nigerian government disputes that criticism. President Muhammadu Buhari has repeatedly touted his administration's efforts to return the Chibok girls. Nearly all of the Dapchi girls were returned a month after their abduction, though the circumstances of their release remain unclear. Bashir Talbari, the special assistant to the governor of Borno State, where Chibok is located, said citizens should do less criticizing and more collaborating with the government.
At the initial stage when the girls were abducted, it was the effort of the Borno State government that made it possible for names to be placed on the faces of the girls. And you see, but security sometimes is a collective responsibility. Mm-hmm. The citizens themselves have to also take a part in ensuring the safety of their environment.
For the people of Chibok, the government has largely failed. The girls' school where the abduction happened has still not reopened. High school students have to use the primary school to continue their educations. Alan Manasseh, a Chibok native whose niece is among the missing girls, hopes to take his advocacy to Nigeria's parliament. He is running for a seat in the House of Representatives.
Government actions must translate into touching directly the lives of the people, not just we are doing everything possible, day in, day out. You are doing your best, and your best cannot translate into something.
Manasseh plans to attend the 4-year commemoration activities in Abuja this weekend. Other events are being planned around the world. Organizers say they expect the crowds to be significantly smaller, but they will forge ahead anyway. Chika Odua in Dakar for VOA News.
And in more news from Nigeria, President Muhammadu Buhari says he will seek re-election in 2019. Meanwhile, Nigerian political observers say the public has mixed views of his record. Buhari has struggled over the past few years to destroy the Boko Haram terrorists and violence between herdsmen and farmers and reduce corruption. Journalist Mike Mbonye in Port Harcourt spoke with Precious Elekima, the coordinator of the Coalition of Nigerian Movement in Rivers State. Elekima is critical of the president's performance in office and believes Buhari can be defeated by younger candidates supported by the coalition.
From what is plain before us, with the level of insecurity from the Boko Haram the herdsmen issue. And the entire Nigerian state feels that he should have taken a deserved rest at this point, and some other person will have come in.
Mbonye also talked to Jackson Leken Ojo, a public affairs analyst in Port Harcourt. He says Buhari has performed well in some areas, with one exception: his campaign against corruption.
The numbers of people that have been arresting, doing that, they are the members of the opposition. There are a lot of people surrounding Mr. President that are, heavily corrupt, and nothing is happening to those people. It's like, the view of Nigeria today is like, immediately you join the APC now, all your sins about corruption have been forgiven. And that is the way we are looking at it. So the thing is not straight. It's not doing it well. We are becoming a laughingstock in the Committee of Nations. Nobody is taking us seriously in the area of fighting corruption.
On the other hand, Buhari supporters say while Boko Haram has not been completely defeated, its fighters have lost territory. As for corruption, supporters point out that Nigeria rose 24 places on the World Bank's Ease of Doing Business rankings and internationally recognized for its progress in fighting graft and mismanagement. And they say Buhari has helped boost food production. They say shortages in the Northeast have dropped by half under his administration. Polls also show that Buhari is one of a small number of politicians rated highly by the public for integrity, and supporters say he needs another term to achieve all the goals he set forth when he took office 3 years ago. The World Bank says Kenya's economy will grow 5.5% this year, compared with an estimated 4.8% last year. Economists say it reflects the easing of multiple headwinds that dampened growth in 2017 and a recovery in the global economy. From Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports.
The international lender says estimates for GDP growth have improved due in part to better rains and less political risk after last year's prolonged election cycle. Kenya has also been experiencing heavy rains since the beginning of March, raising expectation of good harvests. Agriculture is the backbone of the East African economy, accounting more than 75% of the workforce and about 51% of the country's gross domestic product, or GDP. A severe drought in the first quarter, slowdown in private sector credit growth, and a protracted election crisis weighed down on economic growth in 2017. Alan Dennis is a senior economist at the World Bank and a lead author of the report. He says the recovery in the global economy is also supporting a rebound in business sentiment.
Some of the headwinds from last year are beginning to ease or have eased, particularly the improvement in the weather conditions and secondly the dialing down of political tensions, which had implications on investment overall. We also seen a broad-based pickup in the global economy, both from advanced economies as well as emerging markets, and all of that is supportive of the recovery in Kenya.
Allen warns there are other risks that need to be addressed: fiscal slippages leading to macroeconomic instability and the potential for another drought could dampen growth prospects. On the external front, a spike in oil prices and the potential for negative spillovers from global markets pose major risks. According to Allen, Kenya needs to reduce deficits, cut spending, and find measures to increase revenues in order to improve fiscal consolidation. Despite the rosy picture, the report says Kenya lags behind in poverty reduction. Hoods Johan Pape is an economist at the World Bank.
If you compare Kenya to other lower middle-income countries, and Kenya has recently joined that group of countries, then poverty is still quite high. Like, related to this, you can also see that the pace of poverty reduction is actually not as high as it could be. And this implies, and that's sort of like the strongest point of my messages, that poverty is far off from reaching poverty eradication in 2030, which implies that to be able to meet that target, the policy basically has to support that, for example, in terms of a more inclusive growth and bigger efforts towards poverty reduction.
The report notes that growth in the agriculture sector accounted for the largest share of poverty reduction, but also revealed progress is vulnerable to climate shocks. Kenya has identified four big priority areas for the next 5 years to accelerate economic growth and development. These include agricultural and food security, affordable housing, increased share of manufacturing, and universal health coverage. The underperformance of exports has also contributed to the deficit, according to the lender. Kenya has been a bastion of manufactured exports within the East African community over the last 5 years or so, with a strong dynamic private sector. However, this performance has been declining rapidly due to several factors. Economist Alan Dennis explains.
If you look at the market share that Kenya is capturing within the EAC region, it continues to what? Decline, decline, and decline. Why is that the case? When we looked at it, it's a global phenomenon, let's put it that way. Let's not just say it's an East Africa phenomenon. Basically, EAC is becoming more of a global village, and there are very competitive goods coming from elsewhere, particularly from China, that is eating into the market share of some of the areas that Kenya held sort of sway there. That obviously is having implications for Kenya's and the performance of Kenya's exports.
The World Bank argues for Kenya, just like other developing countries, to compete effectively with other global manufacturers, it needs to improve its skilled labor force and other capabilities. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
22 past the hour, you were listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. In the Gambia, the Army Command says it is determined to hunt down and capture soldiers and officers wanted by the government in connection with crimes committed during President Yahya Jammeh's rule. Already, two former army generals are standing trial for desertion. Reporter Pandera Mbai reports.
Under President Adama Barrow, Gambia is struggling to resolve human rights violations committed under the repressive Yahya Jammeh government. Victims of human rights violations want the government to help bring perpetrators to justice, but that has proved a daunting task. Court proceedings already have begun for two former brigadier generals, Ansumana Tamba and Umpa Mende. Major Lamin Sanyang is the army spokesman. He says the generals are charged with desertion and, if convicted, face a prison sentence of between 2 years and life. Gambian human rights activists welcome the trial of the two generals, but they also want the government to ensure the accused officers have legal representation and receive a fair trial. Major Sanyang says Tamba and Mendi won't be the only ones to face court. Others, including members of Jammeh's former special guard, called the junglers, have been arrested.
Some of the members of the Gambian armed forces who were used and abused by the former regime, for example, the junglers, are all in custody, almost all of them, 90% I can say.
The army spokesman says the army is committed to arresting soldiers on the run.
So we are cognizant of our constitutional mandate, and we will not shirk from that responsibility one inch.
The Gambian army was linked to persecution of citizens during Jammeh's 23-year rule. Sanyang says that army reforms made since Barrow took office last year will prevent such abuses. Pa Samba Jau is a Gambian human rights activist based in Washington. He is less confident about the army reforms.
No, I'm not satisfied. I've not seen anything that, to me, looks like reform. I know that they have to deal with a very serious situation because we have an army that was injected with a lot of people by Jammeh who were just there to serve Jammeh's interests. So how do you weed them out? That's the problem.
Jau believes that true reforms can only take place if Jammeh's former supporters are purged from the military. Jammeh lives in exile in Equatorial Guinea. Human rights activists have called for his extradition to face justice in the Gambia. For VOA Africa, this is Pandirimbai reporting.
In 2013, an Egyptian court sentenced 43 Americans, Europeans, Egyptians, and other Arabs to jail, ranging from 1 to 5 years. They were accused of receiving foreign funds and operating civic action groups without approval. Egypt's top appeals court recently overturned the jail sentences of 16 and ordered them to be retried. The charges regarding receiving foreign funds has been a point of tension in U.S.-Egyptian relations. Sharif Mansour is the Middle East and North Africa Program Director at the Committee to Protect Journalists. He's among the defendants in that case. He spoke with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi from New York about the reasons behind the retrial decision.
The legal proceedings in this case have continued since 2011 until 2013, when the government issued a verdict that the appeal process started. I joined a few of my colleagues at the time who used to work with Freedom House to demand that Egypt's highest court, the Court of Cassation, look at our case. And we haven't heard a response for 5 years. We have thought that appeal died out in the midst of all the ongoing mass trials that the Court of Assisions have taken on since the military launched a crackdown against former President Morsi's supporters in 2013.
Many of the defendants, including at least 15 Americans, left Egypt and received 5 year sentences in absentia. You were one of them. Would the retrial include you, or you and similar cases would have no recourse?
The verdict only allows 16 out of the 43 defendants to receive a retrial. And all of those included are mostly Egyptian citizens, people who, like me and others, were denied the right of appeal just because they refused to return and spend 5 years in jail until the Court of Cassation issues a 1 or 2 year indictment. This is unfortunately the tragedy of the Egyptian trial system. Hundreds and thousands were put sentenced in pretrial detentions, denied rights to representation, visitations, any standard of legal protections since 2013. And many of them to this day have served up to 5 years in jail without a right to defend themselves in custody.
The NGOs, workers who received jail sentences in Egypt, were associated with democracy promotion organizations like U.S.-based International Republican Institute and the National Democratic Institute. Why then the government of Egypt would target rights activists and people who are promoting democracy?
This is a systematic targeting by the Egyptian government, the security apparatus, and media supporters to defame, smear human rights work and advocacy in Egypt, and to blame human rights groups, including international human rights groups, of being behind the violence, the chaos, and the ousting of former President Mubarak.
From New York, that was Sharif Mansour with the Committee to Protect Journalists. He spoke to VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.